The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before.
This great nation will endure as it has endured. Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
From every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring.
As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it, now or ever. We are Americans.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
It is exactly that. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us as we get underway on a Thursday, the 25th morning of the fifth month of the year of our Lord, 2023. And now it's officially on. We started yesterday the same way I started the Gorka show day before, saying the battle has been well and thusly joined. But that was in anticipation of the actual joining of the fray by Ron DeSantis. He is now officially in after last night's bizarre and overstrained server rollout on Twitter. But regardless of how that looked and sounded, what has looked and sounded like an extraordinarily successful gubernatorial run for Ron DeSantis has now elevated him into the national picture. DeSantis is in. Chris Christie is likely to get in. Glenn Youngkin might get in. Not sure about those two, but there's possibilities for both. And whether they do or not, I don't think either one of them really, really has a hope in this particular cycle, which means, is it fair to say the field is set? I mean, it is what it is. If Youngkin gets in, he might take some support away from DeSantis. He might take some sort of support away from Tim Scott. Doubtful he'll take much away from President Trump. But if Youngkin gets in, he may be a part of the split vote issue. But I think Chris Christie is dead in the water, no matter what happens, whether he starts a campaign or not. But it begs the question, if the field is set right now, how do you rank them? And the field, of course, would include the frontrunner, President Trump, the governor from Florida, Ron DeSantis, the former governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, also an ambassador to the United Nations. It includes Senator Tim Scott, also from South Carolina. It includes billionaire tech guru Vivek Ramaswamy, who's going to be joining me this morning. It includes former radio host and former gubernatorial candidate in California, Larry Elder. The field is set. And that's pretty much it. And I'm going to be asking you to rank it today. I'm going to ask how you feel about that, and we're going to talk about why. And not just who your favorite is, but how you rank the field. the field goes, you know, six or seven deep. How do you rank it top to bottom, and why do you rank it such ways? I'm very much looking forward to that. It's going to be a very good conversation. The conversations, of course, have already started on social media. I've been a part of those. I've been kind of launching some questions there, and I'm looking forward to bringing that discussion to the airwaves today. Also looking forward to three great interviews to the program this morning. Coming up in about a half an hour, Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the author of Woke Inc. He is an extraordinarily successful entrepreneur, and he has got a great message. He has got a great conservative anti-woke message that sounds in many ways similar to that of Ron DeSantis, who just entered the race last night. Vivek is the author of Woke Inc. Ron DeSantis has coined the phrase, Florida's where woke goes to die. And it's not just a slogan, because he is killing wokeness, including ESG, including DEI or DIE in the schools. He is, he really has taken on Disney and all of their woke crap. I mean, he's living what he is talking about. Vivek is as well. That's a really interesting dynamic with those two. And so we're going to talk to Vivek Ramaswamy about not only Ron DeSantis' entry into this race, we're going to talk to him about President Trump's response to that. We're going to talk to him about some of the issues that he will be forced to discuss on the primary campaign trail. So this is all coming up very fast for Vivek Ramaswamy. That'll be at 9:35. At 10:10, Dr. Everett Piper joins us on some of the latest battles in the culture wars, including the Los Angeles Dodgers story, which just continues to get worse and worse as the days go by. And that, of course, is a huge Major League Baseball story. It's not Dodger-specific. It's baseball-specific. And that includes your Cleveland Indians. So we're going to talk about that with Dr. Everett Piper. And then coming up at 10:35, there was opponent testimony heard yesterday on the SAFE Act, Saving Adolescents from Experimentation, down in Columbus. Brian Stewart, Representative Brian Stewart, was there for a part of that and heard some very interesting testimony, asked some very interesting questions. We're going to get his take on what happened yesterday. So this is, of course, a very big issue in the state of Ohio. So we've got Vivek Ramaswamy, Dr. Everett Piper, and we have Brian Stewart, Representative Brian Stewart, all going to be a part of our discussion this morning. You can be a part of it, too. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers gets you here. And as always, friends, let's go ahead and start our program with our Pledge of Allegiance. If you are a patriot, please stand. Face your flag. If you don't have a flag, we're not going to hold it against you, but let's work on that. Face your flag, put your hand on your heart, and join us. If you are still a believer in the Biden family crime syndicate, then you don't understand what this flag represents anyway. You are exempted from the request to stand and pledge your allegiance to it. You may instead take a knee over there next to, well, Joe Biden himself, the way it really appears, along with that ex-quarterback. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so much to dive into after what happened last night. Particularly, we're going to address the rollout, which, of course, is drawing mockery from some and applause from others. Talking about Ron DeSantis' rollout of his campaign on Twitter Spaces and having it be glitchy and unable to be heard or viewed by many because of a server crash. Some said, look at that. They can't even roll out the campaign right. This guy's a loser. This guy's, he tried to get cute by doing a Twitter Spaces announcement instead of a press conference or a ballroom filled with supporters the way others have announced and so forth. So some mocked it and said it's evidence that, the Ron DeSantis campaign is going to be short lived. Others said, are you kidding? It crashed because over 700,000 people tuned in at one time to watch this, and it crashed the servers. It was the largest single event that they have had on Twitter. And that's a great sign about how many people are interested in Ron DeSantis. Elon Musk, by the way, is the one who said that at 1,700,000 plus people logged into the event, and the servers just couldn't handle it. So after it crashed, people had to try again, and close to 350,000 people came back in after that to watch it you know, the second time around, or to, you know, to tune in eventually. So, you know, it's a moment in time. It'll be forgotten in a week, but for now, it's a lot of people. And I'm going to ask Vivek that question. I'm going to ask Vivek Ramaswamy that very question. Is it a good sign, or do you find it comical? President Trump mocked it on social media. So did Joe Biden. So did a lot of Democrats. And this is a very, very interesting dynamic as far as how this whole thing played out yesterday. And it needs to be spoken on. Yesterday, as Ron DeSantis made that announcement for president, for his run for president, there were a lot of protesters who were gathered outside and jeering and chanting their hatred for Ron DeSantis. And according to a number of people, including Laura Loomer, who is a diehard Trump supporter, she said, quote, "I am live on the scene of the Four Seasons Resort in Miami, where Governor DeSantis is about to kick off his official presidential campaign. Hundreds of protesters on the left and the right are here to protest DeSantis. They are chanting and signing, 'All of us against DeSantis.'" And I think that needs to be explored. We know why the left would be against DeSantis, the same reason the NAACP tried to declare Florida as, put out a travel advisory to declare Florida unsafe for blacks and people of color and people who are LGBTQ, which I can't help chuckling when I say those things because of all of the extraordinary numbers that are so much better for minorities in the state of Florida than they are nationally. And the fact that, you know, Chicago, black people are getting shot left and right. Baltimore, Los Angeles, Cleveland, you know, so many places all around this country that are very, very dangerous for blacks and for minorities in general, according to the crime statistics. But they're going to say Florida, where blacks are thriving, is a terror state that is bad for them. Anyway, I see why the left is going to protest DeSantis, because he has turned Florida into something very, very special. But the idea that people on the right were there to protest DeSantis, I think we know what that means. These are diehard Trump supporters who are there to join with the leftists against their common enemy, Ron DeSantis. And I think that's something that needs to be discussed and needs to be explored. Because I'm going to say something that I said, I think I said it yesterday. I may have said it Tuesday too, but I want everybody in this now, what I think is pretty well complete GOP field, to be able to take the pledge and declare, whether it's on a debate stage or just in a personal statement, I will support the eventual nominee, whomever it might be. And at this stage, by the way, Donald Trump is leading in a runaway. It might not even be a very close or interesting primary season. Maybe. But I think everybody should raise their hand and say, I pledge to support the GOP nominee, even if it's not me, whoever that person is, I will support them and help them win the presidency. We have to stop the Marxists. That's what I would hope everyone would say. But I find it disturbing and troubling that social media is filled with a lot of President Trump's most diehard supporters who are so concerned that Ron DeSantis might actually be a threat that they are online and declaring, if Trump isn't the nominee, I will vote Biden. If Trump isn't the nominee, I will sit it out. And the third one I am seeing all over the place on Twitter, if Trump isn't the nominee, I'll vote for Bobby Kennedy. Those are the three big things that I am seeing. Now, of course, you can't vote for Bobby Kennedy if he's not the Democrat nominee. It makes no sense. I'm sorry. There is one other. I did see several, "I will write Trump's name in," which is also not, that doesn't work. But nonetheless, the point being that it's Trump or will surrender. And I hope that's not the case. I know it is because I'm looking at all of the MAGA pictures for the logos, for the, you know, the profile pics and the bios. There are just a lot of them, a lot of them, a lot of fellow America Firsters, of which I am one, a lot of fellow Make America Great Again supporters, of which I am one, who are saying that if it isn't our guy, we'll sacrifice the entire thing. We'll sacrifice the country. We will not vote for DeSantis. And the only way to get that nonsense to stop is for the leadership, in this case President Trump, to declare, if I'm not the nominee, I'm voting for and supporting whoever the nominee is. That's what must happen. Ron DeSantis must say the same. Tim Scott must say the same. Vivek, I'm going to ask him, must say the same. If they tell their supporters, don't give up on me if I lose the nomination, sit it out, protest with me, don't vote for the nominee, let the country fall to hell, if that's what the message is from any of them to their supporters, and if that's the message from their supporters and they don't renounce it, then we've got problems here that are much, much bigger than the Biden family, crime family. We've got much bigger problems. So I hope that's not the case. I know I'm seeing it. It is the case in terms of what people are writing. A lot of Trump supporters online are writing that they will not vote for anybody other than Trump, even if Trump loses the nomination. They will not vote for DeSantis. They will either vote for the Democrat, write in Trump's name, or skip it altogether. That's a major, major issue. So I hope we can get past that nonsense and really do what's best for the country. And I hope, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I will make that pledge right now. If Donald Trump is the nominee, I will fight and campaign for him on radio and in speeches and everywhere else I can, as if my life depends on it. Because it does. Because if we do not defeat the Marxists, this country is lost. Give them 4 more years to do what they have done in the last 2.5, and we cannot recover. So I will campaign for Vivek Ramaswamy if he's the nominee, as if my life depends upon it. I will campaign for Ron DeSantis if he wins the nomination, as if my life depends upon it. For Tim Scott, for Larry Elder, if he rose from obscurity, not that he is obscure, but in terms of poll numbers, I don't care who it is. And if it's Donald J. Trump, we will ride that train as far as it will run. And we will push and push and push and must defeat the Marxists. It's just that simple. And I need to know that every one of these candidates is in the same mindset. So we're going to talk about this. Vivek Ramaswamy is coming up here after the bottom of the hour. We're going to take your phone calls after that. I got Dr. Everett Piper coming on at 10:10. We got Brian Stewart a little bit later on as well. But we're going to talk about this race now that it's been joined. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
Waking up America from its woke slumber. Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on The Answer.
I've been wondering why. Still somehow I believe we'll always survive. Now I'm not so sure you're waiting.
All right, 9:36. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. Ron DeSantis got in the race last night. We're going to talk about that entry and what it does to this field with one of the candidates in the field. We are awaiting our connection with Vivek Ramaswamy. Ohio's own, by the way, Cincinnatian. Vivek Ramaswamy is, of course, a candidate. He is making a lot of noise. The numbers aren't going to show it at this particular moment in time in terms of polling, but he's making a lot of noise, and he's making a lot of very strong statements that a lot of really true conservatives believe in, and I'm one of them. I like a lot of what I hear from Vivek Ramaswamy. on me. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. But before we get there, let's hear a little bit from the man who made his announcement last night on Twitter Spaces after an early glitch in which the servers were overwhelmed by interested viewers and participants. Ron DeSantis had his first say as an official presidential candidate.
Ban thing is a hoax. There's not been a single book banned in the state of Florida. You can go buy or use whatever book you want. What we have done is empowered parents with the ability to review the curriculum, to know what books are being used in school, and then to ensure that those books match state standards and are age and developmentally appropriate. So, for example, parents have flagged books in schools that, for example, teach middle school kids how to use sex apps, that provide graphic depictions of sex acts and sex toys for people as young as fifth grade. And so clearly that is not appropriate to be in a middle school classroom. And so parents object and the schools take them out. I did a press conference that we called Exposing the Book Ban Hoax. And before I had the parents come up, before I spoke, I just played the video that had the images of the books that the parents had objected being in their kids' classroom. And the local news had to cut the feed because they said it was too graphic. Well, if it's too graphic for the 6 o'clock news, how is it okay for a sixth grader or a fifth grader? And so nothing's being banned. They're basically ensuring that we make curation choices that are consistent with state standards. And on the
That's just part of one of the many questions that Ron DeSantis answered yesterday during the Twitter event. But also he went on Fox News immediately after with his first televised interview as a presidential candidate and talked to Trey Gowdy. Again, as we talk, and we're going to talk with Vivek momentarily, about wokeness and what that really means and why this is such a huge part of his campaign for president.
Is that an example of something Governor DeSantis might become involved with, but President DeSantis would not? I mean, the president has a different role. There would not be that, I guess, interconnectivity with a private business, or do you think it's also appropriate for a president to do that?
Well, if there was somehow a federally conferred private government given to a corporation, like you had with Disney, then that could potentially be something that you would do. But I don't think that that exists anywhere else in the country. So I think this was a unique setup involving the state of Florida and this one company. And it started many, many decades ago. But clearly, it's not something that was viable going forward. So I just don't think you would have the same set of facts, a president vis-a-vis what a governor would do in this situation. But we will, as president, lean in against woke ideology and against the sexualization of children. It's wrong, Trey, what they're trying to do to these kids. We're not going to abide by it. And in Florida, we say we're the state where woke goes to die. You know, as president, I'm going to make sure woke ideology ends up in the dustbin of history.
And again, that's kind of in keeping with his theme about Florida is where wokeness goes to die. This is a theme that is, I think, very popular with a lot of conservatives. Watch the reactions to all of the pride stuff that's being planned for the month of Groom that is coming up in 6 days. Look at the reaction of all of the wokeness that is pushed into stores, onto baseball fields, into classrooms, and more. Americans are sick and tired. Conservative Americans are sick and tired of wokeness. That's why Vivek has made that a theme of his campaign. That's why Ron DeSantis has made that a theme of his gubernatorial run in Florida. And now, of course, as he runs for president. But it's not just about wokeness. There are a lot of other important matters that do need to be discussed, including, well, the state of this economy. The state of this national debt. We're watching and looking at this horrific debt ceiling fight as it continues. And I'm not going to talk a ton about it until we get some movement on it. But, you know, there are some questions that have to be asked. How are we going to tighten the bootstrap, or not our bootstrap, tighten our belts, if you will, stop spending so much and stop driving this economy into the ground? Not to mention the inflation numbers to the sky, for crying out loud. There has to be some fiscal sanity, and Trey Gowdy asked Ron DeSantis about that,
in the country.
All right, speaking of delivering results, if you were to become the president, one of the first issues you would confront is inflation. What would you do about inflation? And do you believe it is linked to deficit spending? And can deficit spending be addressed without addressing mandatory spending or what people call entitlements?
Of course the overspending is driving inflation. I mean, if you go back to March of 2020, you've seen massive amounts of debt added. You've seen the Federal Reserve print trillions and trillions of dollars. Anybody knew at the time, and people like our friend Thomas Massie were screaming from the rooftops at the time, that it was going to lead to persistent inflation. So you need to spend less money. You also need to expand domestic energy production. Energy costs contribute to inflation. We have an abundance of resources here that this president doesn't want to use. So we will reverse Biden's energy policies very quickly. But we also need a Federal Reserve that's going to focus on maintaining a stable dollar. They should not be the economic central planner for our country. They're not accountable to anybody. They're not elected by anybody. And yet their printing of money has really thrust us into this. They said there wouldn't be inflation, and yet here we are. Now they've been hiking interest rates, and that hurts the economy. So we need a Fed focused on a stable dollar, and don't worry about trying to manipulate the rest of the economy.
If a candidate for the Republican nomination or president says, I can balance the budget, I can restore fiscal sanity, and I can do so without touching mandatory spending or what others call entitlements, should that person be believed?
Well, Trey, you know the math. I mean, at the end of the day, we're spending so much more, and it's a combination of both. I mean, there are some spending programs that are on autopilot that Congress doesn't even touch, and those have grown dramatically. You have also, though, seen a huge increase in what they call discretionary spending. Certainly in the last 4 or 5 years, Congress is spending at levels that you and I couldn't have even fathomed back in the day. So I think it's a combination of all these things. You know, right now we have a situation where Joe Biden is refusing to do really anything to try to limit how much money is being spent. And I think he's been singularly irresponsible in terms of how he's handled the federal budget.
So that's just part of the conversation that Ron DeSantis had last night with Trey Gowdy. And I wanted to ask Vivek Ramaswamy about that. It looks like we're not going to be able to make that connection with Vivek this morning. After all, getting messages from his media people that he did have a schedule conflict now. So we're going to try to reschedule that for a future time. But all that does is open up the doors for you. 216-901-0945. Now we've got time for your calls. I've been telling people who have been calling, or we have, to call back after the Vivek conversation, but you can go ahead and dial now at 216-901-0945. Do you find the rollout of the DeSantis campaign last night, which again had the Twitter space crash because of the number of users, do you find that to be troublesome in any way? I want to read a tweet that came out from Hugh Hewitt just moments ago. And I think Hugh makes a very salient point here. The reaction to this, the overreaction to this, I think is just a little bit silly, particularly from the mainstream media. Now, I don't always agree with Hugh on everything. Hugh calls himself center-right. Sometimes I find himself just a little bit too far to the center, in my opinion, and not enough on the right. But I think he's right here. He said, because the legacy media really loves to hate DeSantis, we get headlines about tech glitches at the start of his Twitter spaces. What blue bubble nonsense. It took 20 minutes to cope with the huge audience, then it was fine. Some laughs were had online, but his campaign raised $1 million in small donors, and he rolled right along. How very MSM, acting as though it was some sort of Obamacare meltdown. I do think the reaction was an overreaction. I agree. I also think he was trying to be cute. And that, you know, there's something to be said for that by saying we're going to do it in a non-traditional way because we're going to run a non-traditional campaign. So we're going to not just, you know, have the ballroom announcement and the fiery speech the way Tim Scott did and the way President Trump did when he made his announcement for reelection and so forth. He said he was going to be, you know, do it a little bit differently. So he tried to get a little cute. The service couldn't handle it. And so it ended up looking, you know, looking bad. It's being called a disaster, you know, as in spelled like DeSantis, D-E-Zaster. And you know what? Again, it'll be forgotten in a few days. But what won't be forgotten is the candidate getting in and the message that he brought with him. And I think that's very, very important. So I want to know how you feel about that. 216-901-0945. And oh, by the way, one other part about this needs to be addressed. Shortly after the rollout, President Trump got on Truth Social and decided to give his, I don't know what to call this. In all seriousness, God's honest truth, I don't know what to call this. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was thinking. But President Trump got on to Truth Social and made a very bizarre post. If we didn't know that President Trump has never taken a drink in his life, and we all know that story because his brother, was an alcoholic and became an alcoholic after like one drink, like some people are predisposed to it, and he was never going to take that chance, I would think he was drunk. Because I don't know what else to make of this tweet. But I know he doesn't drink, so he was sober. But this Truth Social post that he posted last night reads, and I quote, Rob, not Ron, Rob, which I think he does intentionally as if to say, your name is so irrelevant that I don't have to remember it. But it says, Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. And then in parentheses, truth. And then yours does not. And then in parentheses, per my conversation with Kim Jong-un, which he spelled wrong, of North Korea, soon to become my friend. That's it. That's the truth. That's the truth. That's what they're called on Truth Social. I follow President Trump, obviously, on Truth Social. That's what it says. The truth, meaning the tweet, in this case, in his social media space, that's all it says. Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Truth, yours does not. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. I've read this thing 60 times last night. I finally posted it on my Facebook page and with one caption that says, huh? That's because I don't know what to make of that. Perhaps somebody, can help me with this. This is our likely nominee. This is our leader in the national polling. Again, national polling needs to be taken with a grain of salt because that's not how primaries are won. How are you polling in the battleground states that you have to win primaries and caucuses in? But be that as it may, he's far and away the most popular Republican. And I can't understand what our frontrunner says and is saying. And why is he talking about being friends with Kim Jong-un? Is that a flex? Is that something to brag about? I don't get it. I'm trying to make sense of any bit of this. My red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Truth. Yours does not. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. What is that? And it's not a spoof. It's not a fake. It's on his Truth Social account. His official verified checkmarked blue Truth Social account. He runs the thing, for crying out loud. So this isn't some bizarre, hack. This is, I don't understand what he is saying, but if he's saying that I'm going to be friends with Kim Jong-un, who of course is the tyrannical dictator of communist North Korea that murders and tortures people with impunity, I'm not sure that's a great thing to be saying, but in what way? It's the most bizarre response to the DeSantis launch last night that I've seen yet, and I don't know what to make of it. I want to. We need to find out where things are between the ears of President Trump right now. Like I said, we know he is triggered by Ron DeSantis' entry into this race. We know this. We know he has a real concern about Ron DeSantis. We know that it's completely off kilter, considering what he said is that he considers DeSantis' run disloyal because he himself endorsed Ron DeSantis, and therefore DeSantis owes him to not run against him. And yet Tim Scott was also endorsed by President Trump, but he doesn't say Tim Scott owes him by not running against him. He welcomed him to the race. What's the difference? The difference is that he doesn't think Tim Scott is a threat. He thinks Ron DeSantis is, I guess. But why this bizarre? I mean, this is almost Kamala Harris worthy. A word salad. My big red button is bigger, better, stronger than yours. Truth, yours does not, per my conversation with Kim Jong-un, he spelled it, of North Korea, soon to become my friend. It's a salad, and I don't know what to make of it. If you do, we'll take calls, 216-901-0945, right after this. Okay, 9:56. Tanya in Akron was on before the segment even started, so she gets first dibs. Hey, Tanya, fire away.
Hey, I think that I actually liked what Ron DeSantis did last night. I listened to a lot of things on Clubhouse, so I'm used to that format. And it was good to see all the different people that were able to be able to ask some questions. Don't think it was too cute. I just think it was different. He needs something to deal with his personality. The problem that it started too late, and a lot of people didn't get a lot of the questions from a wide variety of people because a lot of people were able to feed off of someone else's questions.
That's true. That 20-minute delay wasn't, like a forever thing. It's not a huge deal. But you're right. There are some people, because of that, they didn't get to hear the first 20 minutes. And other people, once they realized it wasn't working at that time, may have just given up. That's why Elon said it was over 700,000 people logged in to view that at the start. By the time they got it back up and running and the servers were restored, it was around 250,000 or something like that, which is still an extraordinary crowd to watch a Twitter Spaces event, but it may have driven enough people away to the point where, well, we can't hear it now, so I give up, and they went on to other things.
Yeah, and that's the American way. We only can keep your attention for a tweet anyway, so whatever.
So true.
The other thing you said, ranking, I still will go Trump, but Trump can lose me really quick by doing what he did with that stupid tweet that truth after he said it, because those are the things that made people hate him and made us have to explain him. I don't want to do that this time. If he can't stay on track and be a presidential candidate because he was a president before, I'm tired of it. DeSantis would be my second, Vivek would be my third, and Tim Scott would be my fourth. I want people that have crossover appeal and don't have a hate, people that actually hate them. You know, you can't never turn someone, if someone hates you, it's hard to turn their mind. If someone disagrees with you and you have a conversation with them, you might be able to turn them. Trump is still, he talks about how independent he is. We don't have a good head of the Republican National Committee because he went with Romney's niece. Okay, give me a break. Why are we acting like he is so conservative?
Yeah,
We have to start looking at people that can one win, that can is more important to be American first, our Constitution second, and Trump is Trump first all the time. And in that, he's America and Constitution. I want someone who would say, I will die for this country, and I will die for this, okay? We have people who will do that. And
well, let me get in here, Tanya, because I'm short on time here, but I'll say this, and thank you for the call. No one can accuse President Trump of not being willing to sacrifice for this country. He sacrificed a great deal of his own personal fortune when he ran the first round and when he won, because he had to divest all of his businesses. From all of his businesses, he did not take a salary. We all know a lot of that story. He cost himself a lot of his own personal fortune when he became president. So I do understand your point when you say it's all about he acts like it's all about him and not about I want somebody who's going to put the country first and so forth. I think President Trump puts the country first too. But when it comes to this primary campaign and his place in the Republican Party, he will not share any spotlight with anyone. Instead of it being about the team, it's about me. So that part I do understand and agree with. That is a very fair criticism, but I will always respect and defend Donald Trump's own personal sacrifice of his own wealth, for crying out loud. He could have stayed being a game show host and made a, you know, continue to be a multi-billionaire, real estate mogul and so forth, and he gave all of that up to do this. So his sacrifice should never be forgotten, even if what you just said, a lot of what you just said is true about this this run this time around. All right, it's 10 o'clock. We're going to get a news break. Then we're going to come back. We got Dr. Everett Piper. We've got Brian Stewart. We've got more of your calls. Stay here on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number two is underway now, 10 minutes past 10 o'clock. Appreciate you being with us. It's a Thursday, the 25th morning of the fifth month of the year of our Lord, 2023. We are steamrolling right ahead toward the month of Groom. And I wish we could go straight into July. And I mean that in every sense of the word. Dr. Everett Piper joins us once again for his regular Thursday commentary, guiding us through these culture wars like nobody else can. Dr. Piper is a best-selling author. He is also a podcast host. His podcast is called The Rebellion. He is a county commissioner in Oklahoma, and he is a twice-weekly columnist for The Washington Times, having added Ask Dr. E. Dr. Piper, good to have you back. How are you, sir?
Always good to be on your show.
Normally, I would start with one of your columns, this is particularly now that you're doing two. But Dr. Piper, this has just been eating away at me ever since I first saw it and heard about the story with the Los Angeles Dodgers, which, of course, means Major League Baseball. The Dodgers don't do this kind of thing on their own. They have to have approval from Major League Baseball for all of their promotions and all of the things that they do on their field. So Major League Baseball has decided that it is okay to not only invite to participate in their Pride Parade or Pride Day events, a trans group of hateful, I'm trying to keep the license, the radio station's license here, by not using the words that I want to use, a group of drag individuals who wear Catholic nun costumes and mock the church. They mock the faith. They mock the Christ, the risen Christ. They mock Easter. They mock the Passion. It is not just a, hey, we're trans and we're out here, love us and show your support for us. It is clearly intentional mockery of Catholicism, specifically Christianity in general. Dr. Piper, some of the scenes that this group is responsible for are online. I shared some of them with you. They defy description. There is no religion, none, that would be able to be mocked in such a way other than Christianity, and specifically in this case, Catholicism. And Dr. Piper, not only have they been invited to participate in Los Angeles, they are being given a Community Heroes Award for their indescribable blasphemy. Dr. Piper, I want to start there and get your thoughts.
This is... Yeah, I'm taking a deep breath here for an obvious reason. I'm exhausted with it, and so are you, and so is everybody else. But let me say this before I answer the question and suggest where this all came, how this all started and why we're suffering this phobia of Christianity. You know, you're accused of being a homophobe. I'm accused of being a transphobe. We're accused of being phobic because we disagree with people. Well, these people are afraid of Christ. They're afraid of the church. They're Christ phobes is really what they are, because they disagree with the values and with the virtues that have been espoused by the church for 2,000 years and have been taught within the Christian faith since its inception. And if you want to argue that the Old Testament is part of the Christian faith too, which I obviously would, then we've got 4,000 years plus of history that proves our values, our virtues, our ideas work for the betterment of culture and for a free and virtuous people. And that when you tear down those boundaries, you're going to get garbage. And that's where we are right now. But I take this breath because I'm exhausted I'm exhausted with it because of the vitriol and the animosity toward the Christian faith and the church. So how did this all start, Bob? It's kind of, well, that'll never happen. This belongs in the category. I mean, you and I and others have been saying for years that when you open up Pandora's box on this nonsense, these subjective identity claims, the claiming that you can identify as something just because you've got an inclination to go there, that your desires define you, and that your passions and your proclivities are the definition of your personhood. This is a terrible, terrible place for us to go. Well, it all started with the colleges and universities. It all started with us teaching identity politics at Ohio State University and the University of Ohio and Michigan State University and University of Michigan, and the list goes on and on. It started decades ago, and I've been warning about it for decades. I said this would happen. And I don't mean to personalize this, but I said this would happen. I said it when I was a college president. I said it before I was a college president. I said, this has no end. When you start identifying by your libido, if your libido, if your passions, if your drive is the sum total of who you are, there's no end to this. Any minority, any group can claim minority status because they want to do something. You want to be a thief? Then you're a minority group. You are a group of thieves. You deserve minority protection because you have a propensity, a proclivity, a desire to steal. You want to be recognized as a minority for lying? Well, then you will, because there's no end to this. And on the sexuality side, it doesn't stop. Okay, Obergefell brings us gay marriage. Well, that's all we want. No, that's not all you want, because it's going to go somewhere else. There's no end to this. It's going to end up in polygamy. It's going to end up in polyamory. It's going to end up in pederasty. It's going to end up in interspecies attraction. It's going to end up in pedophilia. Oh, no, that'll never happen. It's going to end up in men pretending to be women and dressing in drag and blackfacing women and stealing all their rights and their dignity. It's going to end up in mocking the church because you can't have the church coexisting. There's no such thing as coexistence because it ignores the law of non-contradiction. The bumper stickers should say contradiction, not coexistence, and this is a perfect example of why. I mean, this is Christophobic. Number one. Number two, it is intolerant of the church. It's an insult to the only religion that can be insulted because no others are free game like this. And the reason for it is, quite frankly, our colleges and universities have taught garbage and our pastors and priests have remained silent while this nonsense has been sweeping across our land. The only solution is to step into the fray and say stop. And the proof that it works, you've got people that I don't think espouse Christianity, like Kid Rock, saying stop. Stop. We're not going to allow you to do this to our beer. And it worked. It worked. Bud Light is suffering. They're reeling from it. Target is suffering because some of the country western stars, Kid Rock, etc., are saying stop. Well, where is the church? Where are the priests? Where are the pastors? Where's the leadership of the church saying, no, we will not tolerate this intolerance toward Christ and the church?
Very well said, Dr. Piper. The Bud Light suffering is still ongoing, and according to a lot of industry experts, there is no end in sight. They are hemorrhaging money. It is extraordinary. But they're the only ones. It is far and away the most successful boycott, particularly conservative-led boycott, I think, that has been done, at least in modern memory, if not ever. Target isn't anywhere near that yet. Target has not yet begun to feel the pain that Bud Light feels, and they must. Likewise, Major League Baseball must feel the same pain because of this Dodger story that I'm talking about. Major League Baseball has to sanction these things. And so it's not just Dodger fans that need to not buy tickets, not just for the game on their Pride Night on Groom 16th, I think it is, but period. No Dodger blue caps, and it's not just them. I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio. The Cleveland Indians fans should not buy a nickel's worth of tickets, merchandise, their beer and their hot dogs at the ball. They shouldn't even go to the ballpark. They shouldn't watch the games on TV and help their ratings, which helps get their more money. There needs to be, this is what I say, Dr. Piper, and I've said it very specifically to Catholics, but I'll say it to Christians in general. If we can't stand up against this mockery, I mean, they do pub crawls mocking the Stations of the Cross at every pub where they go and take shots and drinks. They mock Christ and say, oh, Christ, we adore thee. And then the attack on Christianity in this instance that Major League Baseball is allowing and, in fact, celebrating by giving them a Community Heroes Award means everybody must stop supporting Major League Baseball. And Dr. Piper, on a bigger note, this, somebody brought it up yesterday on this program, Major League Baseball has become very, very, very Hispanic in terms of the rosters of players. I want to say it's a majority. I think there are more Hispanic players coming from Latin America, Central America, South America, and so forth into the United States. There's a lot more Asian players than ever before, too. But a very large, large percentage of Major League Baseball rosters are stocked with Latin players and Hispanic players, an overwhelming number of which are Catholic. These players need to rise up and say, we will not play. If they allow this mockery of our faith to go forward, this blaspheming, this impersonation of Catholic nuns, of Christ himself on the cross, and doing sexualized dances around him and all the things that they're doing, they have to stand up and say, we will not play. And as I said before, or I started to say, if Christians will not stand up against this, then what do we stand for? I literally don't know.
Amen. And the problem here is people apparently are more interested in defending their beer brand than they are in defending the brand of the cross. Okay? And shame on us. Shame on us. I applaud Kid Rock. I applaud the Country Western Stars. I applaud everybody who has said, nuts to this. We're not going to drink Bud Light any longer. We're going to hold this. We're going to hold Anheuser-Busch accountable for this lunacy and this insult. Great. But really, seriously, church members, those that are listening to your show right now, those within the body of Christ, are you going to be shamed by somebody who had the guts, had the intestinal fortitude, had the spine and the backbone to defend his beer brand, and you're not going to defend Christ? And I'm not saying be mean-spirited or hateful or vitriolic, but to have courage, at least step forward and say, no, I'm not going to play ball, like you said. I won't play for this team, and no, I won't go to the game. I can do something else other than spend my money by going to a ball game, and I'm not even going to watch it on TV. We know that when these corporations are hurt, that they start to reel and they'll pay attention. But the church has not attended to this. The church doesn't think it's important. The church is worshiping at the altar of tolerance rather than the altar of truth. The church would like to be kind rather than defend the confessions of the church, the truths, the doctrine of the faith. I mean, this is an evangelical problem as much, if not more so, than a Catholic problem. I'm furious with my evangelical leadership across the nation for remaining silent and sitting on their thumb while this stuff is going on. And in the meantime, who suffers first and who suffers most for our science? Women and children. It's the women and children that suffer.
That's right.
Women are maligned and children are now being sexualized.
100%. Dr. Piper, we took a lot of time with that, and I apologize. I could not wait to get your thoughts on all of that stuff that was going on that outraged me so much. So we'll take a time out here. We'll come back and talk about Ask Dr. E. We'll talk a little bit about your immigration story as well. Dr. Everett Piper continues with us right after this on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay, we're going to continue now. I got 5 minutes left, so we're going to spend 2.5 minutes on each of Dr. Piper's latest works. Ask Dr. E. This time, Dr. Everett Piper, a reader is asking you to reconcile love versus legislation in the LGBTQI debate. I'm going to read the question, and then you just give us a summary of your answer. Before Obergefell, you couldn't have convinced me to vote Democrat if you tried. To me, the LGBTQ agenda was too big to ignore. Supporting a candidate that was pro-gay or pro-trans was inconceivable. However, I have come to realize that creating laws against these things isn't the solution. We must operate within the framework we're in and not legislate against it. Love, not legislation, is the answer, says Big Tent Republican in South Dakota. And you say what?
Well, operate within the framework we're in? Really? Would this person have said the same thing to Martin Luther King Jr.? Operate within the framework you're in. Don't try to change anything by virtue of legislation. No, they wouldn't have said that to MLK. Would they have said the same thing to William Wilberforce, who argued for over 20 years on the floor of the British Parliament to change legislation and stop the British slave trade? Would they have told him, operate within the framework you're in? The answer is love, not legislation. No, they wouldn't have said that to him. Would they have said the same thing to Abraham Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation? You could go on, where legislation is necessary to correct things that are wrong. So this is a ruse. This is the lie that a lot of the Christian community, evangelical community in particular, has bought. No, you don't operate within the framework of evil. The only way you stop evil is to fight. You have to fight to do so, and you do so politically, you do so morally, you do so educationally, and you don't just say, well, we're going to love, we're not going to legislate. And, oh, by the way, if the answer is love, you might go back to something we talked about before the break and recognize the fact that Christian ethics, the Christian morality, Christianity has brought more love and dignity and justice to women and children than any other worldview in the history of humanity.
That's an astounding thing to think of when you hear it phrased like that. And Dr. Piper, I wish I could follow up on that, but I do want to get in your other column for the Washington Times, and I want to read one line from it that was particularly interesting to me. You're talking about Biden's open border policy. You're describing it as unbiblical and historically stupid. You talk in great length, about St. Thomas Aquinas, and you point this out. Quote, today the left loves to cite Leviticus 19, 33, 34. When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. You're right. The left uses that and takes that to say, see, we must welcome all immigrants, legal or otherwise, into this country. Give us your summary there.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it, that even this, like this trans group that's mocking the church by dressing up like nuns, they think Leviticus is awful because Leviticus has laws against their sexual expression, their sexual behavior. Leviticus is an awful book. It's a hateful book. It's terrible. But then they turn around and they'll wave Leviticus to the high heavens. They'll wave the banner of Leviticus with rainbow colors when it comes to immigration. This is crazy. It's inconsistent. But here's the thing. Thomas Aquinas acknowledged it. Alexander Hamilton acknowledged it. Ronald Reagan said it. Donald Trump has said it. Tony Abbott from Australia has said it, that a country without borders is no country at all. Now, why did Aquinas say this? You know, back in the 1200s, okay? Aquinas argued that there are three views of immigration, and he went back to the Hebrew language. The Hebrew language describes the word sojourner or stranger with three different terms. And only one of those terms, ger, G-E-R, refers to the legal immigrant. The other two are either visitors or enemies, okay? Now, you treat a visitor or a tourist differently than you do a naturalized citizen, somebody that wants to be part of your country and wants to embrace and become, pledge allegiance, if you will, to the flag of your country. The sojourner that is to be welcomed with full acceptance was the legal immigrant, the naturalized citizen. Even the Hebrew language, the ancient language of the Old Testament, acknowledges that. Thomas Aquinas was highlighting that in the 1200s, and we know this to be true. Even Alexander Hamilton, again, the founding father that the left loves today, you know, he's the Hamilton, he's the leftist of the founding fathers. He has an interesting screed, quite frankly, where he says, you must close your borders or you will be taken over by the enemy.
Yeah, what a brilliant, a comparison there. The use of Leviticus for their purposes, to attack it when it does not, serve their purposes and serve their ends, and to salute it and to use it and to trumpet it when it does. It is that's not how the Bible is, and that's not, you're exactly right. If the premise of your column is spot on, as it always is, this open border policy that Biden champions and so do his supporters is not biblical, no matter how much they try to make it seem so. Dr. Piper, a lot of ground. I wish we could do two hours on some of the stuff we had to do today, but thank you for squeezing in the best we could. I appreciate you very much, sir, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great blessings, brother.
Thank you. Blessings to you as well. 10:30, we'll take a time out here. We're going to go to an Ohio story next. We're still protecting kids, though. At least that's what we're trying to do with the SAFE Act, saving adolescents from experimentation. Democrats want to experiment. And Brian Stewart, State Representative Brian Stewart, heard yesterday opponent testimony of the SAFE Act. We're going to talk to him next about that on AM 1420, The Answer.
Enlightening the sleeping masses and stoking the fire of the American dream. Always Right Radio with Bob Prantz on The Answer.
Indeed, 10:36 now. Thanks for being with us. Thanks again to Dr. Everett Piper. Very, very illuminating stuff. A lot of things to think about and chew on. Make sure you read his stuff. If you're not following him on Twitter at Dr. Everett Piper, you should. If you're not following his work at the Washington Times website, you should. He writes twice a week, including Ask Dr. E. Want to pivot now away from some of the national things, and let's talk about what's going on in our state. Yesterday, there was opponent testimony to the SAFE Act. The SAFE Act, of course, is Saving Adolescents from Experimentation. It's an attempt for Ohio to join a list of other states that value children's bodies and values children's lives and wants to see them protected from experimental surgeries, which is exactly what they are. Brian Stewart is a state representative who has been a champion for the SAFE Act and many other very important pieces of legislation. He tweeted yesterday, "I just finished hearing, listening to opponents of the SAFE Act, which would prohibit sex change surgeries on minor children in Ohio. It was extremely telling that not one single organization said these surgeries should be legal in Ohio. Not one." And I think that is telling. Let's find out more about it as we welcome Representative Stewart to our program. Brian Stewart, thank you so much for the time. How are you, sir?
Bob, I'm great. It's always a privilege to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, we recognize and respect what great work you are doing in Columbus. Not like all of your colleagues, to be 100% honest with you, but you're a champion. I'm blown away by this. I didn't hear the testimony yesterday, but I did see a list of some of those who are going to be testifying from psychological organizations and medical organizations and others who are supposed to be telling us that trans surgeries for children trying to transition from boy to girl or girl to boy is a good thing. And what you're telling me is all of those individuals, not one of them actually said surgery should be legal.
It was really interesting, Bob. You see the media coverage over this bill, is really hyperbolic. But when, I use these hearings to try to kind of pin down where opponents are, what actual problems they have with the bill, where we could potentially bring them on board. And, I'm also a lawyer. I do depositions, every week for a living. And so, I asked a really pointed question. I asked the same question verbatim to every organization that came in. And I asked in a way that some people didn't like, but we need to describe what these surgeries are, okay? And I asked them point blank. I said, does your organization believe that it should be legal in Ohio to remove the penis and testicles from a 15-year-old boy or the breast from a 15-year-old girl as treatment for gender dysphoria? I made it very specific so that there's no, confusion over what we are asking. Mm-hmm. And every single organization either said, no, we think that should not be legal, or they tried to dodge, or they tried to dodge again. But when I pressed them, nobody wanted to come in and speak up for surgeries.
So I'm a little perplexed. Weren't these witnesses there on behalf of your colleagues in the state house that want to oppose the SAFE Act so that they can have these surgeries be performed on minors? I mean, I'm a little confused. They're their own witnesses, and they didn't come and testify the way they wanted them to.
It was really interesting, Bob. So what they're hanging their hat on is they still want to be able to do puberty blockers. They still want to be able to do cross-sex hormones for minors. But most of the witnesses, to me, kind of are waving the white flag on surgeries a bit. And I think it just speaks to what we've been saying in our party on this for a long time, which is that banning, permanent life-altering surgeries on minors should not be a controversial issue. Every poll that's ever been done on this shows that, majorities, in some cases vast majorities, and in some polls even a majority of Democrats agree that surgeries should be something are not performed on children. In the state of Ohio, there's a whole range of things that people can't do till they're 21, and to say that we're going to allow this type of, new experimental surgery on minors is something we think is just not good public policy.
We're talking with State Representative Brian Stewart about the opponent testimony yesterday in the hearings on the SAFE Act. Help me out, though. I know what castration is. It's a surgical procedure. Wouldn't chemical castration in its place if it achieves the same result, also be a form of surgery? And chemical castration is the result of some of these hormone and puberty blockers that we're talking about. Infertility is the result of many of the drugs that they're talking about, you know, keeping them legal or making them legal for minors in the United States. And I'm reminded, or in the state of Ohio and across the United States, quite frankly. But I'm reminded of one of the signs that that an activist wears to a lot of these events. He's called the sandwich board man, or whatever you call those guys with the big boards. And his board says, minors cannot consent to being castrated. And that's exactly what these drugs do. Chemical castration is what's used for sex offenders to stop them from being able to, you know, have the desire to, you know, to molest children. Minors cannot consent to that because minors can't consent to anything. It's what makes them minors.
It's a huge concern, Bob. It's why, you know, myself and frankly a very large number of our caucus have been co-sponsors of Gary Click's bill. From day one. It's why, you know, regardless of what these organizations believe, you know, we are adamantly opposed to cross-sex hormones being prescribed to minors. We had some really heartbreaking testimony from, you know, some minors who were in the process of detransitioning, in this committee as well, and were describing and, you know, showing obviously the effects of taking these hormones and some of the permanent effects on, you know, body development, you know, tone of voice, all these kinds of things. And, you know, I don't want to give folks too much credit. I mean, I don't know if some of these organizations that came in yesterday, you know, when they get out in the hallway would still tell their folks, oh yeah, we're against surgeries. But it was just telling that they publicly, they know that this is such an extreme position that it damages their credibility to come out and say that they support surgery. We're not going to, you know, let our foot off the gas. We think cross-sex hormones is, you know, a part of the bill and should remain a part of the bill. But it's a big concern.
Yeah, as it should be. And I'm going to ask one last question on this, Representative Brian Stewart. And I'm just looking for some sort of consistency here. I'm trying to understand this. If a 14-year-old male doesn't like his body, not that he thinks it's a female body, but it's just weak, and he wants to be a star player, he wants to be an athlete, and he knows that taking extra T, extra testosterone, will help him build the body that he wants, no medical professional in Ohio would give that to him. It would be unconscionable. Not to mention, it's illegal, and it would be outside the bounds of the rules of the OHSAA. You're not allowed to take extra hormones, otherwise known as steroids, to change your body. So a 14-year-old boy cannot get that testosterone, cannot get that prescription. But if a 14-year-old girl wants to become a 14-year-old boy, those same doctors will say, here you go, and write a script and say, here's the testosterone, go make it happen. Tell me how that's in any way logical or fair.
It's not logical or fair, Bob, and I think you've really hit the nail on the head. You know, another analogy we've used in the committee and that I've struggled with wrapping my head around is, you know, when I was growing up, you know, anorexia was a big issue. You know, that was something that we were told about in schools to kind of guard against. And, you know, anorexia being a condition where, you know, somebody who is thin believes that they are, you know, severely overweight. Well, you know, it was never described that you would treat that condition by saying, go get liposuction, right? The treatment was to help people with the mental condition that is giving them these troubles. And I want to be very clear. My heart goes out to anybody who is struggling with, you know, gender dysphoria or any of these kinds of thoughts. But, you know, when you're in that sort of situation, you know, our belief is surgery at a time when you are a child and cannot consent and cannot, you know, we say all the time that children do not have fully formed frontal lobes, right? And that's why there are things that we protect children from. We think that should certainly apply when you're talking about permanent surgeries that even these children's hospitals on their website will say these surgeries create an enormously high risk for permanent infertility.
Well, not only the surgeries, but the cross hormones, the drugs, exactly. Yes. You know, I mean, the puberty blockers, these things are not reversible. If you block a child's puberty with these things, there is no coming back from that. You know, a lot of the people on the left like to say, you know, these hormone blockers and puberty blockers and extra testosterone and estrogen, all these things can, you know, it's all reversible. It is absolutely not reversible. And the science in that is unquestioned. The reality is, and as you pointed out, when it comes to the surgeries, their frontal lobes are not developed. These preformative brains are simply not in a position to make long-term, forever, everlasting decisions about their bodies, whether those decisions lead to surgeries or the consumption or injections or whatever of these types of drugs. The same result applies. Permanent effects, good or bad, and almost exclusively bad, they are permanent, and they're being made by kids who cannot make life-altering decisions because, again, we acknowledge them as kids for a reason. Their brains, their frontal lobes, they are not developed. So how can we and, you know, the other thing, too, Representative Stewart, you talk about gender dysphoria. That is such a tiny and very, very, very rare psychological disorder. The overwhelming number of these kids who are going into this nonsense now, they're not victims of or suffering from gender dysphoria. They're victims of social contagion. They're victims of the influencers online. They're victims of the influencers in the stores and at the baseball games and everywhere else that we're seeing this stuff now. They're getting likes and clicks and attention, and they're being told by teachers and coaches and counselors and everything else, you can be whatever you want to be. And they're like, yeah, I want to be something else. And it's a social contagion. It's been proven to allow a kid in the midst of a confusing time when they're very easily influenced by peer pressure and other forces like this to make life-altering decisions. Representative Stewart, is unconscionable. No one should allow that.
Bob, there's a statistic that we highlighted in the committee hearings, which is, you know, Reuters, you know, not exactly a right-wing media outlet, right?
Not at all.
They did a study and showed that between 2017, not very long ago, between 2017 and now, you've had something like a 300% increase in the number of, minors, you know, quote unquote, diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And to your point, you know, I asked witnesses during these hearings, how do you account for that? Right? I mean, there's something, you know, that is not a natural phenomenon. That is, to your point, this has become a bit of a cause celeb, and this has become something where, you know, when we have other, mental health issues that some of these minors are going through, and again, my heart goes out to them, but it feels like we're jumping in and saying, well, here's your problem, where we didn't do that before. You know, we need to get kids help to make sure they are, you know, getting through whatever is troubling them in their teenage years, but permanent surgery is not the answer.
No, not at all. And the idea that anybody would allow this social contagion to make permanent decisions, I just think underscores that there are people with more vested interests in their political agendas than they are with the actual health of children. And to me, anybody who would recommend anything that would impact the health of children in such forever and permanent ways simply does not like children. And I would say that to any witness who testified before your committee in opposition to the SAFE Act, that if they are proposing this or promoting this, they simply do not like children. And I would ask them why they hate kids so much. But that's,
Bob, I boiled it down to this. I said, if I'm wrong, then the worst thing that we're doing is telling somebody that they need to wait until they're 18 to make their own decision as an adult as to what they want to do with their body. If the other side is wrong, we are making permanent changes to kids that they may regret and that they will have no ability to undo. So, you know, I said yesterday we should certainly be erring on the side of caution in that situation and not doing these permanent hormone changes, not doing these permanent surgeries on children.
That's exactly right. Very well said. Representative Brian Stewart, before you go, I wanted to get a comment from you on August 8th and the special election. The Ohio Democrat Party has unanimously voted to oppose and are telling everyone to vote no on this because it's simply not right to require 60% in an election to amend the Ohio Constitution. That's just a threshold that's far too high. But I saw somewhere on Twitter a copy of the Ohio Democrat Party's Constitution, their own constitution and bylaws, which was written and amended last in 2021.
Yes.
And I want to read something to you, and maybe you can help me understand this. Article 4, Amendment, Section 1 of the Democrat Party's Constitution reads, "This Constitution may be amended by 60% of all delegates to any convention." It doesn't say 50% plus 1. It says 60%. Can you help me understand? Are they saying that it should be harder to amend their own Democrat Party Constitution than it is the Ohio Constitution?
Bob, it's almost as if they believe that a constitution is a governing document that should not be subject to, you know, radical changes or, you know, the whims of the moment. It should have broader appeal and broader support before you'd make changes. What a concept, right?
You know, it is quite a concept. It's almost like they would think that way. It's kind of strange. Yet they're telling everybody, nope, it should be 50% plus one to change the Ohio Constitution. Representative Stewart, how you feeling? We're in late May. We've got some time, but they are out there, you know, banging the no vote drum on on August 8th. We need to vote no on, yes on August 8th and then no in November. What's your feeling right now as far as the movement?
I feel good, Bob. I mean, every time we have, I'm privy to some polling that's been done, and you know, multiple times over, it's like the basic concept of, do we think the Constitution should be protected with a 60% margin? People are very receptive to that. Republicans, Democrats, soft Democrats, even, and independents. That's a concept that I think people agree with. We've got a great coalition coming together of social conservative organizations, business groups, Farm Bureau, Restaurant Association, a wide array of groups coming together to pool resources and make sure that we have a great campaign. I'm confident that if we turn out our voters, we will win. And Bob, I want to point out something else, because the opposition to this is much like the Ohio Democratic Party's Constitution. I pointed this out in committee. The National League of Women Voters requires a 66% margin to make changes to its bylaws. The AFL-CIO requires 60%. The Ohio Federation of Teachers, Northeast Ohio Chapter, 75% margin to change their own constitution. And so it's like all of these groups understand exactly what we've been saying, which is that a constitution should be protected against, you know, bare majorities making changes. We don't want to have the Ohio Constitution has been amended 172 times to date. We don't need to get 173 through 200 in the next 5 years. And it's time to make this change. We've been talking about it a very long time. Time for Ohioans to step up and get it done.
But isn't this an attack on democracy? I mean, I'm looking at a headline in the Cleveland.com pages today. Why Mike DeWine is a hypocrite in supporting the effort to trash democracy in Ohio. That, of course, a reaction to the fact that the governor has said, yes, he will vote for this issue in the special election on August 8th. They're saying it's a trashing and an ending of democracy.
To suggest that it is a trashing of democracy to ask Ohioans to show up in a free and fair election, a statewide election, that you get a month of time to vote on, Bob, that is somehow anti-democratic is almost too dumb to have to respond to. But that's the talking point, and we're going to go out and spread the good word across the state.
Well, if we stopped responding to all the dumb stuff that comes from the left, we wouldn't talk at all. Representative Brian Stewart, thank you for what you're doing down there. I really appreciate it. When are we going to get some movement on the SAFE Act? When will we get a committee vote and get it out there on the floor?
Well, you know, our chairman's done a great job. We've had some really great hearings, really substantive. I think our members have all asked really good questions and put a great, you know, done a professional job here. He's saying that we're going to get another hearing on June 14th. And I know the chairman's goal, at least what he said to me, is he would like to get this passed out of the committee before we break a bit for the summer, so that then it's in the hands of the speaker and we can do it in short order.
Let's make that happen. Representative Brian Stewart, thank you for coming on. Thank you for your great work. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Thank you. It's 10:56. We'll take a timeout here. Representative Stewart was our last guest for the day, and that means you have control from here on out. We're going to rank Republican primary candidates now that Ron DeSantis is in and the field looks set. We're going to talk a little bit about, well, any of this that you've heard over the course of the last hour and a half or 2 hours. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Stay here on Always Right Radio.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Hour number three underway now. It's 11 minutes after 11 o'clock. It is a Thursday, the 25th morning of the month of May in the year of our Lord 2023. That means the month of Groom is now just, what, 6 days away. The start of Groom is going to be a disaster. An entire month of this sort of nonsense. Good news for you and for me and for reasonable people who are sick and tired of the targeting of children with filth, sexual orientation, sexual identity, and all the other stuff. Let kids be kids. Good news is that we're starting to see some traction in the Target boycott. Target must feel the very same pain, every ounce of the financial pain that Bud Light is feeling, and then some, as far as I'm concerned. Greg Price is a journalist, and he reported on Twitter just, let's see, this was 25 minutes ago. Greg Price reporting, quote, breaking, I have obtained the internal email that Target sent to their employees following the Pride Month disaster that has caused them to lose $9 billion in 1 week. Where it goes from standing with the LGBTQ community to the anniversary of George Floyd. And I'm looking at a picture of the actual email. And I'll read it. Yesterday was a very hard day for Target, and as CEO Brian Cornell said, thank you for the care you've shown each other, our frontline teams, and the LGBTQ community. Today brings more reflection, pain, and the need for continued care as our team, hometown, and world remember the anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. As you make space to take care of yourself and each other, know that you can always tap into these tools from Team Member Life Resources, and as Mental Health Awareness Month continues, turn to the Take 5 to Take Care Hub for more well-being support. Underneath that email is a big picture of the mural of St. George the Floyd. Literally, it is a mural that makes him look like he has been sainted. It's almost stained glass in its appearance. I kid you not. So two things come from that. Number one, Target is run by absolute radical leftist lunatics. There's no in between. They are not on the fringe. They are far left lunatics. Number two, we can hurt them, which is exactly what they need and deserve if they are going to continue to hurt children. And they are hurting children by continuing to put little girls' swimsuits with tuck spaces in them. Little boys' swimsuits. I mean, there are videos of people holding up the pride and I'm glad I'm queer clothing for toddlers. Toddlers. How does a parent put a shirt on a kid, a little kid who has no ability to even conceive of such things, that says, I'm glad I'm queer, and pride, rainbow pride, and all of this nonsense? If they're going to continue to target our kids with overt sexualization and indoctrination, they deserve every ounce of their financial pain. According to this tweet, they lost $9 billion in 1 week. Bud Light has lost tens of billions of dollars since their ridiculous promotion of this lunacy on their beer cans. My message here is, do not let up. Do not let up. Do not shop at Target. I don't care if their prices are better than the shop down the block. Go to the shop down the block if you care at all about the kids. So that's number one. Follow-up number two is from this story that I told you about, I think, on Tuesday first. The Board of Health in Cuyahoga County is sponsoring their Pride Festival, featuring family-friendly, as they call it, drag for kids. Yes, drag for kids. But worse, the Board of Health is sponsoring this event called Show Your Colors Plus, and the Board of Health is promoting the services that they offer to children aged 13 and over without parental consent or even knowledge, without parents or guardians even being consulted. The quote, our reproductive health clinic is proud to serve all people. The CCBH Reproductive and Sexual Health Clinic provides. So they're not talking about providing care to kids with acne. They're not talking about providing care for kids who suffer sports injuries. Sexual Health and Reproductive Clinic provides, quote, confidential care services to anyone over the age of 13 without parent or guardian. Now, why am I bringing this back up again? Here's why. I told you you need to contact the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, your Cuyahoga County Council representative, the Cuyahoga County executive. Contact whoever the hell you can to ask how and why they're doing this. Likewise, this is sponsored by University Hospitals, St. Paul's Episcopal Church, Cleveland Clinic, and the J.M. Smucker Company. So I'm bringing this up to give you a response to somebody who at least reached out to the J.M. Smucker Company. Now, the J.M. Smucker Company, based in Orrville, is an absolutely repugnant company to begin with. I happen to know people who were fired from J.M. Smucker for not taking their jab, as robots are told to do. These people actually thought for themselves. They did not act like robots. They said, I'm not going to take the jab. I'm very, very concerned about the side effects and long-lasting and unknown after effects. I'm not going to do it. They were fired from their jobs. So I already have no love for the Smucker Company. I've been eating Welch's whenever I buy jam or jellies anymore, any other goods. I'm buying a competing company than the Smucker Company, but you might want to consider that now as well, considering this. In response to someone who complained and asked why the Smucker Company is supporting this Pride Fest in which little kids are targeted with drag and other things, and 13-year-olds are encouraged to come and talk to them for treatment without parents from the Sex Health Clinic, without parents or guardians knowing. And I have received a response to the individual who sent this quote. I mean, I've received a copy of it. This is dated yesterday, May 24. Dear George, thank you for contacting the J.M. Smucker Company to inquire about Smuckers. Our company's history of support for the LGBTQ community reflects our sincere commitment to promoting equality and aiding in the important work of empowering underrepresented groups. As our company is committed to celebrating diversity and promoting equitable rights for all, we are sponsoring and participating in this event. We appreciate you asking, taking the time to share your feedback with us, blah, 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 blah. So the Smucker Company told him to go pound sand. The Smucker Company told them, we are backing this event, which is supported by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, which promises to help kids deal with their, quote, sexual health questions and issues and their reproductive issues in secret without telling mom and dad. I said many times on this program, I'm not a campaign boycotter. I'm not one of these guys who likes to lead the campaigns to boycott things. I'm always worried about collateral damage. But I'll tell you what, I am moving my position on this. Now that I have seen the extraordinary success of the Bud Light campaign, now that I see movement on the Target campaign, yes, you damn well better believe I'm going to call for the Smucker Company to receive a taste of this as well. If they don't care about what is done to kids, again, without their parents' knowledge, much less permission, to hell with them. Welch's forever. That's where I stand. I don't care that it's an Ohio company. And I don't care about Target. Target, I think, is based in Minneapolis, which is not a surprise to me, given the extraordinary, I mean, you know, Minnesota has become California. It's California North. So it's not surprising to me at all about Target, but now this is an Ohio company. Every company that engages in this perversion and the sexualization and indoctrination of young children to advance a left-wing, repugnant, deviant, perverse political agenda, they're going to get a taste of this. And I hope it's enough to make them feel the pain, taste the pain, and alter their course. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. John Stover is he's the president of Ohio Value Voters. He's on line one right now. John, good morning. Go right ahead.
Yes. Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me on. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. 100% behind your position. We need to boycott these organizations. We need to make them feel the pain. We need to we need to send a message not only to these organizations but all organizations that would be involved with this. You know, I wanted to make comment especially about the great conversation you had with Representative Brian Stewart. You know, I've spoken to Representative Stewart. He's a real champion, real conservative for you know, these important matters taking place in the Ohio House. And from what I hear in the Senate, you know, they're ready to move on the SAFE Act, you know, to pass it in the Senate and to move it forward. You know, one of the dysphorias that I made reference to, Bob, back in April when I was in Columbus and I provide my written testimony on behalf of those that were in support of this bill, the SAFE Act, well, it had to do with those that have therian dysphoria. A lot of people say, well, what is therian? Therian is a problem that anyone may have that thinks they're an animal. Well, you know, you have children all the time that think they're a wolf or a cat. But as I stated in my written testimony, Bob, I said, you know, there's not one single situation in the state of Ohio nor the country that I'm aware of where any child psychologist ever suggested that a child needed to go through transition surgery to turn them into an animal. You know, they seek help for them. And this is a mental issue that when it comes to gender dysphoria, the children need to have some help in. You don't turn around and, as was stated during your interview with the representative, that you start cutting off body parts. You just don't do that.
No, 100%. 100%. His example, I've used it before myself with anorexia. If a person's mind is so messed up and they look at their body and they think the body is fat, they don't go to a doctor and the doctor says, yep, we'll do liposuction on you. No, they say, you need to see a therapist. Your body is not fat. Same story. If you're a boy and you look down and your mind looks at your body and says, I shouldn't be a boy, I should be a girl, you don't start altering the body. You say, you need to go see a therapist and a psychiatrist / psychologist and get your mind right because you are not a girl, you are a boy. It's just, it is as simple simple as that. As much as they want to make it complex, as much as they want to, like you say, get into the theory and the interspecies and all the other nonsensical things that they do, it is really, really that simple. If there is a psychological condition, it needs to be treated psychologically, not with physical mutilation.
Yes, yes. Bob, I can't tell you how, you know, I certainly hope that you never go national, because we're going to lose somebody here in Ohio that stays on top of these issues for us. But thank you very much for covering these
such important
topics on behalf of the children.
Yeah, thank you, John. I appreciate that. Very kind words. By the way, I'm going national tomorrow. I'm hosting the Dennis Prager Show, so that'll be tomorrow. But, yeah, that's a temporary situation. I'm not going anywhere. It's 11:24, but I will we'll be right back. Okay, it's 11:28. Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. My call screen seems to be completely jacked up right now, and I want to see if I can refresh it. And yeah, I'm not sure where we are. Josh, can you tell me where we are? Who are we going to here? Sally in Berea. Sally, yeah, my screen is messed up. I apologize, but I do know you're there. Sally in Berea, go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. In regard to the DeSantis lunch, I know there were glitches, but he still did get contributions, and I think he was giving the message that Republicans need to make better usage of all media outlets to reach more people, and we need to expand what we do in our campaign, the various outlets. But the other thing is I do support DeSantis as being the one most likely to win. My concern is there is Trump derangement syndrome, and if Trump gets it, I just don't think that he can win, and I don't think we can survive another 4 years of Biden's and the Dems. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. I appreciate your opinion on it. You know, there's a lot of people who feel that way, too. They still love President Trump. They still think he should win, but they are very concerned, and I'm one of them, about his ability to win in the national election. Because you're right, there is Trump derangement syndrome. And they were willing to cheat him the first time. They will be willing to cheat him again. Is that to say they wouldn't be willing to cheat if DeSantis or Tim Scott or somebody else is the nominee? No. But we know the hatred that that President Trump inspires in the political left. And that does make a lot of people believe that he can coast to victory in the primaries, but he's going to lose to the Democrat machine in the general, the way it happened in 2020 with all of their fraud and so forth. So a lot of people feel that way too, that we need somebody else up there that is going to have a different message. Well, maybe a similar message, but a different person and a different personality that doesn't lead to the derangement syndrome that inspires all of those other things. It's a fair point to make, and I appreciate you making it. We'll continue to discuss this on the other side. Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
Against the darkness of tyranny. Always Right Radio with Bob France on The Answer.
It is 11:35. Always Right Radio. I got time for a few more phone calls in the 10 minutes or so we have before Bill O'Reilly carries us to the top of the hour. Then Charlie Kirk. You get his thoughts on what happened last night with DeSantis and the rollout. Dennis Prager. Then, of course, Dr. G. And then you're going to get yourself some Esekulo and then some Officer Tatum. I'm in for Prager tomorrow, by the way, so I'm very much looking forward to that phenomenal audience as well. But right now, let's go to you. Lisa Woods in Medina. Lisa, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I canceled my Target card last year, and it was so satisfying. If any of the listeners still have one and haven't gotten rid of it, I just want to say, hey, it's fun. They always ask you why you're canceling, and you can tell them. I wish I could cancel again today, but I'm already done. So.
Really? They ask you why? That's good to know. That's very good. First of all, I didn't know they had cards. You're talking about like a Target credit card or like a customer loyalty card or what?
Right. It's a credit card.
Credit card.
You get 5% off your purchases.
Okay, so I did not know that, but I'm glad to know that because I hope people follow your lead. Not only do you call and cancel your card when they ask you, may we ask you why, say, because we're tired of your woke bull crap targeting our children for sexual exploitation. That's why.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let them know where the pain is coming from. They not only do they have to feel it, they need to know why it's there, and the only way to remove it or get rid of it or deal with it is to stop these ridiculous in-store policies. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. And it's so easy not to shop there. There's so many other places to go, and there's so many local places. So I just encourage people to do exactly that. And thank you for the Smuckers info. I didn't realize they were so bad.
Yeah, they are. They're a very far left company, and I've known about it for a bit. I haven't talked about it much on the radio, even though I knew some people who lost their jobs there because of not taking the jab. But now that they're going to do this nonsense and help sponsor, an event and an organization that is willing to pervert kids without their parents' knowledge, without their parents' say so, or permission, it's a bridge too far. And I hope people write the J.M. Smucker Company, just like they're writing or calling the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, Cleveland Clinic, University Hospitals, and St. Paul Episcopal Church. They're all the ones who are sponsoring this this groomer fest that is coming up next month.
It's just horrible. And hey, did you know that Claire Lopez is going to be in town this weekend?
I did know that, and I kind of expected a call from you tomorrow reminding us of that.
I know, but I'll be taking a CPR instruction class. I'll be calling tomorrow. But Claire is going to be here this weekend, and she actually has information about more about who's really behind this LGBT whatever, movement. And she's going to talk about EMPs and also, just basically how we're overrun, unidentified, unvetted herds of illegals pouring through our southern border, plus all the propaganda and
all right, you've convinced me. You've convinced me. We're going to have her on tomorrow. I'm going to have her on. No, I'm not kidding. I've got a slot tomorrow. I'm going to have her on because every one of those things is extraordinarily important to talk about, including and especially EMPs. I talk about that a lot in my private life. I don't talk about it on the air a ton. We should talk about it more because it's a legitimate threat. That we should be aware of. So she'll be speaking to Medina County Friends and Neighbors on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., right? Right.
9 a.m. at the Thirsty Cowboy. And, because it's Memorial Weekend, sometimes I don't have this meeting because it lands on the 4th. But this was so important. I really just, needed to... this information.
Yeah, well, people do travel on Memorial Day weekend. You're right about that. So maybe people will be out of town and unable to be there. But yeah, let's get the call out so that everybody who is in town, who cares, go to Medina County Friends and Neighbors on Saturday morning, 9 a.m. at the Thirsty Cowboy for Claire Lopez. She's wonderful. Lisa, as are you, Lisa, and thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate you. Will in Houston, Texas, my man, on AM 1420, The Answer here in Cleveland, Ohio. Fire away, Will.
Hey, brother, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, we are in a culture war, an economic war, well, soon to be economic war, I feel, at the end of the year, once this recession really kicks in, and a border war. So the person who I want to pick to be the Republican nominee for 2024 is whichever person has talked and has shown that they will be a warrior in those three areas, culture, border, and economy. And I don't care about personality. I don't care about an it factor. All I care about is winning, and whichever person has shown that they will be a warrior in those three areas. And I hope going forward that, more talk show hosts, because, y'all have a lot of great influence, will be laser focused on those three areas and will shine the light on focusing on those areas, and whichever candidate has shown, not just talked about it, but has shown that they will be a warrior in those particular areas.
I think
culture,
that's all valid.
Order, and economy.
Yeah, I think that is in a in a thumbnail sketch, that is pretty much touching the most important areas. I think I agree with that. Obviously, you know, the culture war is the biggest one, or it's among the big. I guess the biggest is always the economy. But you know what? Was it you, Will, or somebody? I think that you and I both follow. I saw on a tweet in a thread yesterday, and I can't remember if it was you or not. So, but I want to give attribution where I can. Somebody said there's an old saying that we go back to, you know, from the late 80s and the early 90s. It's the economy, stupid. That's what it's all about. Bill Clinton, it's the economy, stupid. Well, now it might not be. It might be it's the culture, stupid. It's the culture first. If we don't stop this generation of kids that is being raised right now from being indoctrinated into Marxism, anti-Americanism, critical race theory, LGBTQ, and all of this stuff, it's over for us as a country. It might be the new phrase now might be it's the culture, stupid, and that's what Ron DeSantis has taken on, Vivek Ramaswamy, and others have as well.
I believe, you know, Now, to be honest with you, Bo, I really believe that they are equally as important because, you know, there's a lot of conservatives that will try to push back on the whole cultural thing, you know. So I think we don't want to we want to make both of them, as both of them equally important, the culture and the economy. But that's like, again, coming back to, I just want to say that we want to focus on whichever candidates are focused on those three areas. And as good a president as Trump was, I don't recall him ever really talking about cultural issues outside of Roe versus Wade. I don't recall him really talking about any of those things in particular. Maybe he did, and I just don't remember. But going,
yeah,
forward,
you know, I think you're right, Will. In his defense, though, I think the steroids version of all of this has really happened in the last 2.5 years since Biden actually took over. That it's not to say it wasn't there, but yeah, I mean, and his focus on making America great again was the wall, the immigration issue, obviously the economy. We saw the prices plunge for gas, energy, and so forth, energy independent, all the wonderful things Donald Trump did. You're right. The culture issue wasn't his top of mind thing, but it also wasn't the steroid version that we're seeing right now. And anybody running for president now needs to be able to tackle this. And so I'll be interested to hear what Trump has to say on the campaign trail about all of that. Well, thank you, brother. Always appreciate your calls. Thank you. Let's get one more in on this. This is Dan in Middleburg Heights. Dan, go ahead. You're going to wrap it up for us.
Good morning. Real quick, I'm concerned about this August vote, you know, for the 60% changing the Ohio Constitution. And you had your, I believe it was your last guest, I was kind of shocked that Ohio's Constitution has been altered 150, 160 times.
Yeah.
According to him.
173, I think, is what he said.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when we changed at the federal level, okay, to change our Constitution, it's only been, what, 25, 26 times, something like that.
Yeah.
It's the state. You don't ask the people. There's not an election of the people voting for the change. It's the states as sovereign entities.
Yeah, 75% of the states. 75% of the states have to vote.
Ohio is weak in this area. We're a representative republic, not a democracy. And with the voting mischief we've been experiencing with Trump and all over the country, I'm concerned it's not going to pass in August. Because if you go back to...
We have to pass it. I got to go, Dan. I'm up against it here, but we have to pass it. There's just no two ways about it. We'll fight any way we can. Thanks for the call. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of the show today. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a free-for-all Friday. Be well. Be safe. See you then. Bye-bye.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.